Good day, and welcome to the Fuel of America State of the Union Response Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Jennifer Mullin. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining the call this morning. As you all know, the President gave his State of the Union address last night, and so we wanted to let you have a chance to get some reaction to that speech from the Fuel of America Coalition. And so on today's call, we have Brent Erickson, who is Senior Vice President for BIO, the Biotechnology Industry Organization, Bob Dineen, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, and Jan Koenigs, who is Global Business Director for Biofuels for DuPont. And so I'll turn the call over to Brent Erickson at this point, but just so everyone knows, after the formal remarks from our speakers, we'll open this up for a Q&A. So Brent, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Jennifer, and good morning, everybody on the call. Thanks for joining. You likely heard or read the President's speech last night as he highlighted that his all-of-the-above energy strategy is indeed working, creating jobs and leading to a cleaner, safer planet. And over the past 8 years, the United States has reduced our total carbon pollution more than any other nation on Earth. The President did not specifically mention biofuels in his speech, but he did recognize them in a fact sheet released by the White House ahead of the speech called Key Executive Actions the President Will Take in 2014. In that document, the President highlighted that private sector investments are building natural gas, biofuel, and other advanced fueling infrastructure across the United States, just as research is making these technologies more economically and environmentally effective. And he did reiterate his own commitment to accelerating adoption of these advanced homegrown alternative fuels that benefit our planet, our economy, and our energy security. The Renewable Fuel Standard is the fundamental policy for accelerating adoption of homegrown advanced biofuels. The bottom line is that we believe the President ought to more forcefully state his commitment to the Renewable Fuel Standard as a key part of the all-of-the-above energy strategy if he's serious about reducing carbon emissions and achieving energy security. The President's speech last night coincided with the deadline for submitting comments on the EPA's proposed rule for the 2014 Renewable Fuel Standard. That proposed rule is clearly at odds with the President's commitment to accelerating advanced biofuels, and we have asked EPA to rewrite the rule to be consistent with past years. As part of our comments, the Biotechnology Industry Organization conducted a study on the greenhouse gas emission impacts of the proposed rule from 2013 to 2022. And in that study, we used the GREET 1.2013 model to calculate the 2013 emissions from the amount of petroleum and biofuel actually used during the year. Then we compared this to the emissions from the estimated use of petroleum and biofuels under EPA's proposed RVO volumes. The statutory volumes called for in the RFS, and a more real-world scenario where the cellulosic biofuel volumes are reduced. We next modeled the emissions for each year from 2015 through 2022 using the Energy Information Administration projections of gasoline and diesel use, biodiesel production, E85 use, and ethanol imports. We projected EPA's new outline methodology for setting the RFS volumes for each of those years and then compared them to the statutory RFS volumes. The bottom line of the results of this analysis is that the emissions from the transportation sector will increase in 2014 compared to 2013 if EPA does finalize the RFS rule along the lines they have currently proposed. In fact, greenhouse gas emissions will increase in 2015 and 2016 as well if EPA extends this proposal into those years. emissions from transportation would remain above the 2013 level for the next 6 years through 2019. Emissions are projected to increase because transportation fuel consumption, both gasoline and diesel, is projected to rise over the next few years, and diesel use continues to rise through 2022. So that means if EPA sets lower standards for the use of renewable fuels, the United States will automatically use more petroleum fuels with higher greenhouse gas emissions resulting. This policy is equivalent to putting millions of more cars on the road over the next decade. In fact, it's equivalent to putting 5.9 million more cars on the road in 2014 alone. So the cumulative added emissions from EPA's methodology over the entire period through 2022 approach 1 billion metric tons of CO2 equivalent. So it seems to us it's a bit ironic that the president is on one hand calling for greenhouse gas reductions on a nationwide basis, and on the other hand, EPA's RFS proposal would increase these very same emissions. And we believe that only by maintaining the RFS and its integrity with increasing market space for advanced biofuels can the United States reduce emissions from its transportation sector. The president noted that companies have invested a great deal of time and effort in researching and developing advanced biofuels. That is correct. The industry has put more than $5.9 billion of private money into this effort. There are advanced biofuel projects in 28 states, employing 8,000 people, and creating construction jobs for thousands more. So while fracking is wonderful and it's great we're finding all this oil and gas, the jobs that the biofuel industry is creating are on top of that, and they're very significant for our rural economies. EPA's proposal risks halting that progress, and we think the president and the White House staff should reconsider it. So with that, I'll close out, and I'll turn it over to Bob Dineen, the president of the Renewable Fuels Association.
Thank you, Brent. As Brent noted, the president last night talked about the fact that the United States has reduced its carbon emissions, and the president was absolutely right. But the president suggested that that reduction was largely or mostly attributable to natural gas and the conversion to natural gas. And some of that is most certainly true. The ethanol industry is one that today is 87% fueled by natural gas. But he did ignore the very real role that the increased use of biofuels and ethanol have played in reducing U.S. carbon emissions as well. In anticipation of filing comments on the RVO, the RFA had commissioned a study by Life Cycle Analysis. It's a group that has done work for the NRDC, EPA, the Department of Energy, NESCOM, and many others over the years, and is an expert on carbon emissions. And Life Cycle Analysis determined that ethanol produced from corn today, even including indirect land use change, is 32% better than gasoline. That's how much ethanol is reducing carbon emissions from mobile sources today. Now, the president was focused a lot last night on the potential for natural gasoline, which, of course, will require increased fracking across parts of the country. Life Cycle Analysis had looked specifically at a comparison of ethanol carbon emissions relative to the emissions from tight oils that you would get from fracking and tar sands. And when compared to those non-conventional oil sources, the carbon profile of ethanol and biofuels is even better. Life Cycle Analysis concluded that we are 37% better than tight oils from fracking, 40% better than tar sands oil supplies. And more importantly, we're getting better. Our carbon profile is improved with every new plant that is opened. It will improve significantly as new technologies, cellulosic ethanol, other advanced biofuels are introduced commercially, which will have an even lower carbon profile. At the same time that the more fracking, the more tar sands that we rely upon for liquid transportation fuels, their carbon profile will simply get worse and worse and worse. If the president is serious about continuing a carbon agenda and continuing the progress that the United States has made, the president will reverse course on the proposed RFS. He will allow the renewable fuel standard to continue to drive lower carbon fuels into the marketplace, allow the RFS to continue to drive more biofuels into the marketplace with higher blends, E85, E15, whatever the marketplace will absorb, and allow the potential of the RFS to be a job creator, a carbon reducer, a gas price reducer to be implemented as Congress had intended. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jan Konex with DuPont.
Thanks, Bob. Thank you very much. Yeah, I too listened to the president very closely last night, and what I heard, what stood out to me, is his call to action, right? He said America does not stand still. He wants action on issues that are important to Americans. And we agree, and that's what we're about. As a science and innovation company, we act. And right now, as we speak, there are hundreds of construction workers in Iowa in freezing temperatures, relatively warm right now. It's, you know, I'm happy to report Des Moines right now has in the 20s, but in the last few days, in very sub-freezing cold temperatures, we're out there building a state-of-the-art new biorefinery, a new type of refinery, something for the 21st century that's delivering real progress, the progress that American households need, a cleaner fuel, lower prices at the pump, and Americans that can be put to work in construction jobs, but also in permanent operations jobs, use of the competitive advantage of the U.S. And so I want to make three points here the day after the president's address and in this critical time where we're reviewing the EPA proposals. The first one, as I just said, the biofuel sector is about action. We're building this large facility that we're going to start up later this year, more than $200 million investment in just that facility, our best people at work. Technology developed very quickly. This is very personal to me. I've worked on this for more than 6 years myself. When I took this on, we were in the laboratory, and we are now building a commercial scale plant. Technology that's very efficient, very modern, and leaves, in addition to that, further room for great improvement. Second thing I want to say is that renewable fuels are a very important part of the, quote, all of the above, unquote, policy around energy. We've done the math very carefully around life cycle analysis around the plant that we're building. And I'm not sure people really understand how amazing this really is. And I want you to follow me here for a minute. So we are collecting hundreds of thousands of tons of corn stover in the surroundings of this plant. In fact, we'll be collecting 375,000 tons. We'll bring this to the plant. We'll be operating a very large facility that breaks this biomass down and ferments it to ethanol and also produces a co-product, a solid fuel that can replace coal. And all of this entire supply chain from the field all the way to the tank of the car is going to be carbon neutral. In other words, there is no net greenhouse gas emission, including the use of this fuel. And that is truly amazing. It's a development of a fuel supply chain to a standard that the current industry, the oil industry, cannot achieve, doesn't talk about, but simply can't do. Environmentalists should be extremely pleased with what we do. We are excited about it. This is something that is truly phenomenal, and I'd like you to form a picture of the scale here. And at the same time, environmentalists should be very concerned about the EPA proposal, and more about that in a minute. So this renewable fuel is a really important and material part of the all of the above energy policy, and I can't stress enough how well this technology works and how impressive it is in that regard. The last point I want to make, an important point as well, is that the RFS made all this possible. As the president said in his address, we should stop tax policies that give about $4 billion of tax breaks to the oil industry that doesn't need it. The RFS, what we depend on as a counterpoint, doesn't do that, doesn't give tax breaks. What it has caused instead is a tremendous investment. Brent and Bob talked about it, investment in new technology, in new capacity, which is really much better policy than the continuation of support to a century-old industry. New technology, new investment that uses the competitive advantage of the U.S. and really contributes to its energy independence and security, to its rural economies, and also, of course, to climate benefits. And this is really the execution of something that Congress did absolutely right in 2007, when Congress was action-oriented, bipartisan, constructively put together this vision that we are part of executing, we're proud of being part of executing, excited about it. And what we now want to do is completely execute it. So we're at an important time. The president's speech gave us some confidence here that there's continued support in the administration for biofuels. The action of the EPA here more recently around their the proposal for RVO reduction is disappointing in that regard, probably well-intended but misguided, and we hope that we see them revert in that and put full support for the RFS back in play. So with that, Ruth, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment. We'll go first to Jackie Fatka from Feedstuff.
Good afternoon. This is Jackie Fatka with Feedstuffs. Can any of you talk a little bit about yesterday the comment period closed on the RVO proposal? Any indication on when a final decision could be made? And also, too, you know, last week there was only a couple thousand comments that had been filed. Any indication as to whether you guys were pleased with the final outcome of how many people commented one way or the other on the RFS?
Jackie, this is Bob Dineen. I guess I would say that it'll likely take EPA some time to pour through the comments, while last week there were only a couple thousand that have been filed. Typically, there's a deluge at the end of the comment period, and I know that to be the case here, and I think they will have literally tens of thousands of comments to pour through. I'm generally very pleased with the response that I've seen from rural America, farmers that have expressed to EPA what this means to them and how important value-added market has been to economic vitality across rural America. You know, I think there's been a great deal of response from the heartland. Some of the comments that I know were filed yesterday, the Attorney General in Iowa, for example, filed comments, pretty unusual for an Attorney General to do so, but on some of the legal issues involved. I think EPA is going to take some time to review them. Typically, it would be 60 to 90 days before they've poured through all that they need to respond to and get a final rule out. I would hope, like everybody, I believe, that EPA would expedite this. But I think I'm I'm more interested in EPA getting it right than EPA getting it fast.
Yeah, this is Brent. Just to add to that, we've heard there have been about 16,000 comments, and I think Fuels America helps spur at least 13,000 of those, so I think the outpouring has been huge. And if anybody would like to see the bio comments, please contact Paul Winters. We're happy to share those. I think Vote Vets, for instance, they had a group effort to get 110,000 signatures on a set of comments. So we've really seen an outpouring across the United States. I think the Farmers Union had comments from 23 states. So it's been a real robust response. And I think, you know, to Bob's point, EPA is going to have to go through all those. So it's going to take some time. But I think hopefully they'll have an impact.
We'll go next to Cesare Pacul from Reuters.
Oh, hi. Good morning, and thank you all for making time. Really appreciate it. Just had one question following up on the president's lack of explicitly mentioning biofuels in his speech last night. He spent 4 minutes talking about energy, didn't mention, you know, biofuels at all. I'm just wondering if you all could just reflect on that. And, you know, did you take this as a sign that this isn't a priority for him? What did you make of that silence and speech on this issue?
Cesare, this is Bob. You know, sometimes these things can be overblown because there's a lot of pressure. Everybody wants to get their two cents in. I guess I did find some irony in the fact that it was a gentleman from Texas who hailed from the oil industry that talked about ethanol and biofuels fairly regularly in the State of the Union, and a guy from Illinois who talks about natural gas. There's irony there. But I don't think that that irony necessarily speaks to their priorities. I don't believe that the president has any less enthusiasm today for his carbon agenda. He talked about it last night. I think the president's still committed to his jobs agenda. He talked about it last night. I don't think the president is any less committed to innovation and competitiveness in new technologies. He talked about that last night. And all of that speaks to the renewable fuel standard, to growing the biofuels industry, to allowing the ethanol industry to evolve with new technologies, new feedstocks. I think what we're saying, though, is that no matter what is said in speech, actions speak louder than words. And the president, in the RVO decision, will have an opportunity to speak far louder than the speech last night, because he can correct what EPA has, in our view, mistakenly done in rolling back an energy policy that is driving innovation and is changing our energy future, and he can restore that program to be as it was intended by Congress, a revolutionary program that will reduce carbon, encourage investment in new technologies, and make us far more energy secure. I'm more interested in the actions than the words.
And on that point, Bob, if I may just follow up, are you expecting there to be a change in the final rules?
I think I've said, I do expect there to be a change in the final rule. And I say that because I've seen so many of the comments. I think the comments are compelling. And I hope that EPA and the administration sees it the same way.
Yeah, I'd like to, this is Jan Koenig, I'd like to add to that. What the president did talk about very, very explicitly and with some emphasis is climate change. And as he stated, you know, climate change is real. We're a science company. We know that. And if you want to address this now, biofuels is part of that solution. So that's in that sense, biofuels is absolutely working for the agenda that the White House talked about yesterday. And there's a lot at stake here. As we expressed earlier, we have taken a lot of action. A lot of other companies are investing a lot and are building this industry. And if we don't give proper support to that by simply continuing with the commitment of the RFS as it was laid out, this is in the end going to disappear from here and go overseas or so. So I think there's a lot at stake, and I'm sure the administration knows.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from the line of Mark Dreisham from Bloomberg News.
Thank you. I was just wondering that in the materials accompanying the State of the Union, the administration talked about new tax credits to catalyze investment, advanced vehicles, and is this something that you guys care about? Is this something you think will see the light of day?
Brent, do you want to take this, or you want me to?
Yeah, I was having a hard time hearing, but yeah, we definitely do care about tax credits, especially the cellulosic production tax credit. We'd like to see that extended. I think that is important for these companies that are building these facilities, and we hope that happens going forward.
What's important to us, and these are good initiatives. What's important to us is a stable policy and a predictable policy, because all of these developments, you know, every element of the all of the above policy around energy, and in particular biofuels, takes years to develop and to invest. These are large investments, and so therefore what we have most interest in is a stable policy and a stable implementation of that policy. So yes, there were some tax credits that were in place. We would just simply like those to be continued. We'd like the RFS to be implemented. It's that kind of predictability that we need to make real progress and to get at.
And Mark, this is Bob. The only thing I think that I would add to Jan and Brent is that while the tax incentives are really important and would help level the playing field, given the extraordinary incentives that investments in drilling currently receive, they sort of pale in comparison to the importance of the RFS for creating a market that gives the certainty that Jan is talking about. So these aren't either or. You need to have the RFS as a foundation and the tax incentives for parity.
As a reminder, if you do have a question, please press star 1. We'll go next to John Siciliano from Clean Energy Report.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having the call. One thing that the president didn't mention on climate reduction was the EPA efforts on GHGs for power plants, those new proposals. I was just wondering if you had any sense that some of the EPA regulations are becoming more of a priority and maybe are more contentious and are sort of blocking out the emphasis on the RFS, or are competing for analysis and everything else that might have to go into approving an RFS that would be sort of the focal point for carbon reductions. It seems like the president is looking at power plant reductions and stationary. And I was just wondering if anyone in the comments, have you seen any comments that sort of touched on that this is that biofuels and going after the mobile source piece of carbon reductions is just as important as the GHG of utilities and power plants?
John, a good question. I guess this is Bob. I would just say that you're not going to achieve the kind of progress that we need to see in carbon if you're not addressing mobile sources. You've got to do both, but mobile sources are such a large and important component of greenhouse gas emissions that it can't be ignored. And the RFS was the first and really is the only program in the United States, but across the globe, that is assuring reduced carbon emissions from motor transportation fuels. And to take a step back from that would be a huge mistake. You've got to do stationary sources as well, obviously, but you can't ignore the significant contribution of cars and trucks in terms of greenhouse gases. Okay.
And I'd like to add to that. Yeah. I am convinced that the EPA continues to be very supportive of the growth of renewables. I think that what they have proposed was well intended, but unfortunately really doesn't help. And I think that the developing market of renewable fuels is complex. And possibly they've been concerned about how it would develop. There's misinformation about RINs, for instance, that has been promulgated, and this may have contributed to their proposed action. But I'm very convinced that their support is there. And as Bob said, you know, this is a material contributor to climate benefit. And
just a quick follow-up. I was just wondering if you're seeing any overlap from EPA's proposed Tier 3 rules. And I know some of you have commented on Tier 3 in terms of the ethanol certification fuel proposal that's in there. I was just wondering if there are some concerns with Tier 3 that EPA might be examining, and the proposed RFS rule might be, you know, sort of a reaction to that. Is there any connection between the Tier 3 proposal and the RFS, the downward turn in the RFS for 2014?
John, I think there are some related issues to the extent that Tier 3 would be looking to the autos and the CAFE standards with respect to flex fuel vehicles and that type of thing. But the Tier 3 rule is fundamentally about sulfur, which does not really have a climate change impact. So I don't see them as being in conflict or one really having much to do with the other.
Do you think that EPA might be more privy to go down the path of reducing criteria pollutants, and because they have CAFE rules that address GHGs, they're less concerned about the RFS or more concerned about fuel quality in terms of reducing criteria pollutants, and then the fuel economy standards will take care of the rest? I was just wondering. I mean, there are some lobbying groups that are starting to make this case. Boyd and Gray's is one that I hear from routinely. I was just wondering if that is the case, that sulfur criteria pollutants, GHG rules for vehicles will take care of the GHGs, renewable fuels, okay, well, we'll get to that later. We'll, reduce it now. And I was just wondering if you're hearing anything like that.
Not from the agency, at least I'm not. I don't know if Jan or Brent, if either of you are, but the president wasn't talking about criteria pollutants last night. He was talking about carbon. And the RFS is the only carbon program that we have right now. And there may be some benefits with CAFE, certainly, but I don't think you can get there just with CAFE either. You gotta, for so long, we were always looking to the automobile to reduce pollution and tighten down on automobile standards. Well, what made the 1990 Clean Air Act different was, for the very first time, some burden of responsibility for reducing pollution was put on the fuels. And that ultimately is the source of the pollution. My car sitting in the garage isn't creating pollution. It's only when I start burning gasoline that it does. And that was an important principle, I think, that you've got to assure pollution reduction from the source of the pollution, and you can't put the entire burden on automotive technology. And that's what the RFS does.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, I don't hear anything like that from the EPA either. But in my interactions with the EPA, I continue to see strong support for renewable fuels and for the growth of renewable fuels. They're struggling with understanding and they're struggling with things like the perceived supply chain limitation, the wall. They're struggling with the viability of E85, which we know is very viable, which we saw grow last year considerably late in the summer. And in our view, they have not taken the viability of these alternatives into account, as they were influenced by what they heard about RINs, which is misinformation, what they heard about a blend wall, which can easily be overcome, which we heard about the viability of E85, which we think is very high, and which we've seen in data late in the summer. So I think I don't see anything along the lines of what you suggest, that they tie it to another regulation or anything like that. They want to implement this law, and I'm confident that the comments that are being provided here to them yesterday and the days before are going to help them understand better how viable renewables are.
Great. Thanks, guys.
That does conclude the question and answer session. I would like to turn the call back over to Jennifer Mullen.
So thanks, everyone, for joining the call. As you know, you can always follow up with me if you have additional questions at jmullen, M-U-L-L-I-N, at gpgdc.com. And make sure you're following us on Twitter, at Fuels America. And you can always find new information on the Fuels America blog, which is fuelsamerica.org. Thanks again for joining the call.